from ABC News Radio, KMET 1490 in Southern California. This is Biz Ninja Entrepreneur Radio with your host, Tyler Jorgensen.
All right, thank you everybody for tuning in to Biz Ninja Radio. This is your host, Tyler Jorgensen, and I have a very special guest today, Dan Nitro Clark. Dan, thanks for coming out on such short notice.
Hey, Tyler, my pleasure, man. It's never short noticed. You're always prepared for opportunity.
That's true. Now, some of you may remember Dan from the TV show years ago called American Gladiator. Dan was Nitro. But Dan, you've had that might be your most notable thing in the past, but you also were a professional athlete of other, you know, and played, you played in the NFL, is that right?
Yeah, played in the NFL as a professional athlete. But, you know, I feel like the Gladiator thing was such a great launching pad, and I feel so fortunate that it became kind of that generation Star Trek, you know, kind of the iconic pop show where a lot of guys your age grew up and loved. And I hold that experience close and dear to my heart.
Yeah, and, you know, it was a pretty small group of people that got to be able to – you know, say that, hold that title like you did, that you were, you know, one of the original gladiators. And I know it spawned off, and I actually saw shows when I lived in South Africa. They had a version of the American Gladiators called MTN Gladiators, which is just a company. And so it was kind of funny to see that span around the world.
Yeah, it's been, you know, it's interesting, Tyler. I don't walk down the street today without at least one person coming up to me and saying, oh man, I used to watch you when I was growing up. It doesn't matter if like the guy's 90, they'll always say the same thing. I used to watch you when I was growing up.
Yeah. I think that speaks to the fact that we're really always growing up and never really finished with it. And I think that kind of comes back to what we'll talk about today, is just that life is really a constant evolution and a constant journey. And yours was going on this amazing path of health and wellness and fitness and success, and you hit a bit of a speed bump. And I think that changed some things for you and your trajectory. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, the speed bump is exactly right. You know, I think there's a good book out there, and it's called The Obstacle is the Way. And everybody in life hits setbacks. My main setback in my health was December 2013, while I was working out at the gym. I do CrossFit, and I started to feel chest pain. And I went from chest pain to laying on the floor to being in the back of an ambulance with a heart attack. Now, someone who prides themselves in their physical capabilities and what they can do with the body, having a heart attack and chest pain was the last thing that I thought would ever happen to me. It was that moment where at first, you know, Tyler, I was like, well, what? I can't be having chest pain. Let me just work harder. Let me push through it. And I think that's true, not only when it comes to, you know, something like that, but it comes to in life. A lot of times we don't know how to take a breath, step back for a second, and look at the situation in a different way. But right. For me, I was just bullheaded. I put my head down and I kept working, and, you know, I ended up in the hospital, you know, in front of the doctors telling me I had a heart attack and I was going to possibly die.
So, you know, that there's two things about that. One, anybody that goes through that you might be dying moment is going to have to reassess their life. But not everybody has it to such a core where your identity was about being healthy. So how did that impact you? Where you're like, okay, my identity is that I'm fit and healthy and well, but my identity just got shaken.
Yeah, for someone who's a professional athlete and, like you said, identified themselves with what they could do with their body, it shattered the belief of who I was, and it shattered the core of my existence, because I always thought I was about the physicality and, you know, football player, gladiator, martial artist, CrossFit athlete. That's how I saw myself in the world. And when I was laying in the hospital, you know, and I was at probably the low point of my life, and I said, look, if I can't live life on my own terms, then I want to die. And I promised myself that I wouldn't be that guy in the hospital feeling sorry for himself and weeping, because I've never been that kind of guy. But the next thing you know, there I was feeling sorry for myself in the hospital. And I was just crying. I was openly weeping. And I was saying, you know, asking myself, why me? Why me? Why me? You know, why did this happen to me? I did everything right. You know, I ate right. I trained like a beast. I took all the supplements I was supposed to take. You know, I'm not the guy who was supposed to have a heart attack. And at the low point, I just had this epiphany. And I said, instead of asking why me, let me change the question. And I guess it was all the years of the positivity training, you know, believing in potential of the human spirit. And I changed the question. Instead of asking why me, I asked, what could I be? And as soon as I changed the question that I asked myself, everything else started to change. All these ideas started rolling forward on the possibilities that lay in front of me. You know, I could be a person who, you know, changes, who takes a tragedy and turns it into a gift of inspiration for others. I could be somebody who could show what the possibilities were before in life for someone who had a heart attack. I could, you know, so all these things came rolling forward to me and it completely changed the perspective. And then I realized a couple things, Tyler. One, I realized that a broken heart doesn't mean a broken man. You know, a broken heart doesn't mean a broken man. And as I look back in my life, I always thought everything was about what I could do with my body. But in essence, I realized that it was more that I had a light that burned bright inside of me. That light was my spirit. And my spirit and my vibrance and my soul, if you could say, the same thing everybody has in them, was the thing that pushed me forward. It was a thing that took me from, you know, being this fat, overweight kid, be always picked last, to turning it around and, you know, getting a football scholarship, to playing in the NFL, to, you know, writing and directing movies, to selling, you know, my first book, to selling my first script. It wasn't the body. It was the spirit that burned bright in me. The same light that you have, that I have, that we all have, that many times we lose connection with. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean,
is that just the longest answer you've ever had?
No, probably not. But you know, it was a good one, so we can forgive the length. But I think, you know, there's a line in Fight Club that I really like that says, it's only after we've lost everything that we're free to do anything. And I think sometimes we have to go back to the core of who we are, the base, the that raw self, and strip away everything that we've built up and think, you know, for ourselves, and decide if which of those pieces we want to build again and which of them we want to improve. And it sounds like this was that moment for you.
It, you know, when you face your mortality, you know, it shows you what you love in life, how you want to live. It shows you in an instant what's important. I remember lying in the hospital and not knowing if I was going to live or not. And I didn't care how many homes I have. I didn't care how many cars I had or what kind of cars. I didn't care about the plaques on my walls, the achievements. I cared mainly about two things. One is I wanted the people close to me, the people that I loved, near me. And two, the people that I loved, I wanted them to know how much I did love them. Because as men, I think a lot of time in society today, have this, you know, macho exterior, at least for me. You know, it's way we're brought up in the world with this masculinity, where we're tough, where we can handle anything. And a lot of times we don't express how we feel. We just don't know how. I think it's, you know, with my son and this next generation, it's coming, it's different, it's changed. But with my generation, it's not. It's all about bite down, grit, you know, pull forward. But it was so important to me to let the people in my life know I cared about them in case I didn't make it. You see, my father died at a young age. My father died at 57 years old. And I thought I was going to have more time with him. I thought I was going to have plenty of conversations and opportunities to tell him I loved him and how I felt about him and what I, you know, the problems I had with him. And when he passed away, I was left holding these bag of conversations. I didn't want that to happen with my son and with the people I loved and cared about in my family. So it's interesting what becomes important. And in that inflection point of what becomes important in facing mortality, like I said, you also see a different way of how you want to live your life.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, there's a lot of parts of that life that we're going to now like reevaluate at this moment, right? And so we have, you know, you have your body, but you were taking care of your body, and you have your Gary J. White says you have body, being, balance, and business, right? So you have your body, your being, kind of your soul, how you're taking care of that, your balance, that's, you know, kind of like your relationships, and then business. So let's kind of go backwards through that. So you've, since American Gladiators and that kind of stuff, you've been entrepreneurial, right? You started a run. What's that called?
I started an event business. I started this in 2010 with absolutely no experience in events, and I built it into a seven-figure business. For me, that was just, I saw something that I liked, and I knew there was an opportunity, and I compiled a team of people who were experts in different areas that I had no expertise in. Right. I knew I had some name value, but I didn't know how to put on events. I didn't, you know, I had no idea. So I brought in a friend of mine, Susie, who was working with a film studio who was fantastic in marketing and publicity. Then I also brought in a friend of mine, Brad Boyer, who's a fantastic attorney here in Los Angeles, to help with all the legal matters. And together we executed a plan on how we're going to do this, with me being the front person, but also, you know, running and owning the business. Right. And I've never had employees before this. You know, I always had agents and managers and publicists and lawyers. So, it was, you know, when you're in the entertainment business, you are always entrepreneurial.
Sure.
You have to really, really, it's the same thing as being an entrepreneur. Just the context is different. You have to be a self-starter. You have to look at it as a business. You have to have a good team around you. You have to, you know, find that drive and motivation to continue when you're working alone and it seems like nobody cares and nobody's listening. So it's the entertainment business, acting, writing, directing, producing is similar to any startup business, whether you're a coffee shop on the corner, like my sister just opened up in Orange County, or whether you have a product, a gadget, a clothing store, the skills are transferable.
Sure. And so, you built an event business, and notably the Gladiator Rock and Run, right? Is that what it's called?
Yeah, Gladiator Rock and Run were, you know, I've scaled it back because I didn't like being out of town so much when we were a national business. Right now it's mostly in California. We have an event coming up August 26th at the Rose Bowl. We're the only people who do it at the Rose Bowl, and it's a fantastic event. We raised $300,000 for Talk About Curing Autism. As well. So not only is it a business, but it's a business built upon doing good, which I think is important.
Awesome. So what shifted in your business and how you approached business after the heart attack?
Yeah, I didn't want to waste time doing things I didn't enjoy. That was probably the biggest thing. And that's why I'm transitioning more to speaking and coaching a few select people. And I'm also exploring, you know, doing seminars as well, because I felt a calling to get the message out, which is the message of my new book, F Dying. Can I say?
You can't say the real word because this will be on ABC and on public radio. Yeah.
So F Dying, you can look it up, fdying.com actually, or you can look it up, F Dying on Kickstarter. And I felt a calling. I felt a calling to share the life-changing perspectives of facing your mortality. See, my belief in what I was doing is, like most people, I was running around. I was in the rat race. I was always pushing, driving, chasing. success and what I thought that meant. But during that time of always working and grinding, I, like a lot of people, forgot to live. I was so caught up in the big moments, script, trying to get nominated for an Emmy, an Oscar, pushing my businesses forward, that I forgot the simple beauty and human truths that are out there that cause and give us daily happiness. See, a lot of us are out there, we're pushing hard, you know, we've got these long daily commutes, we have these high pressure work days, you know, we're trying to make ends meet, that we forget to stop and enjoy life. We fall into that old saying, you know, I'll be happy when I achieve the bonus, I'll be happy when I get the new car, I'll be happy when I get my first home, the bigger home, I'll be happy when.
I think I first heard
Tony Robbins say, don't wait to be happy. Instead of achieving to be happy, learn to happily achieve.
I like that paradigm shift, that change of direction, because, you know, sometimes some of these sayings are cliche, but they exist because of they're kind of a universal truth. Things like the journey is the destination, and to learn to stop and smell the roses. And I think we have these kind of sayings because people that are on the other side of their journey look back and realize that those were the parts that actually mattered, and not the big achievements. It was the times where they chose to overcome an obstacle, the time when they chose to just appreciate and have more gratitude.
You're absolutely right, Tyler. I think, you know, even in Tony's book, and just the slogans, they say, just do it. Happily achieve instead of achieve, be happy, but they don't tell you how to do it. Right. Nike doesn't tell you how to do it. They say, just do it. But they don't tell you how. Okay, not everybody has the grit and the tenacity just to get up and do it. You know, and the same thing goes with happily achieving. And I think the book F Dying speaks to that. It's a new paradigm, a new way to look at life by looking at the mistakes I made, by seeing me face my death and, you know, laying in the hospital weeping, to where I am now living some of the, you know, most profound and happiest times of my life, even though I'm doing less and I have less, so to speak. And the book speaks to that. Yeah, I think the biggest thing is, like I said, we constantly put off our happiness. And I've got a few practices in the way I've built my life now where I've found ways to cultivate my own happiness so I'm happy every day. I don't have to wait to achieve something to be happy. All my success isn't tied, and all my happiness isn't tied to what I achieve. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And so you've gone through this shift, and everybody, please, you need to check out Dan's book, F Dying. But what, you know, what do you say to that guy who is you 10 years ago? Who's still battling those long commutes? How do you wake him up and get him to skip that 10 years? Like, because the greatest thing, right, is to allow somebody, or for us to do the same, is to learn from the mistakes of others and not have to keep learning our own mistakes. Well, right?
I think there's five basic principles.
Okay, and
some of them may take a second to get in. The first one is learn to practice gratitude instead of searching for gratification. So I didn't really understand that at first. I was always about gratification, pleasing the senses, acquiring more, doing more. You know, let me eat this, let me smoke this, let me ingest this, let me go and do something, you know, pleasurable for my body that would give me pleasure. I didn't understand gratification, the art of being grateful. I actually think I felt pretty entitled. You know, I worked hard, I earned this, I deserve this. Gratitude is a complete shift where you're happy for everything that you have. And the interesting thing about gratitude, it's something that's available to everybody, but it's not something you're born with. It's something you have to learn to do and to practice. You know, in F Dying, the book, I talk about my gratitude practice. It starts in the morning. When I wake up, I have a list of things I write down that I'm happy for in my life. And it could be simple things like I'm happy to have a bed, you know, to sleep, and I'm happy to have people close to me I love. I'm happy to have, you know, my dogs. I'm happy to feel the sun on my face this morning. And it's also sometimes future things. I'm happy for this radio interview that's coming up. And then I also do this other practice where I talk about finding and having happiness every day. That also relates to gratitude. And what I do each day is I find three moments where I acknowledge my gratitude and happiness. And I like to do this practice where I call it putting deposits into my bank of happiness. I think all entrepreneurs want to put something in the bank. It's usually money, which I love too. But what I also do is I put deposits of happiness into my happiness bank. I know it may sound kind of corny, but it works. So what I do is I'll find three moments in the day where something nice happens or cool that I'm grateful for. Little moments of awesomeness. Oh, the coffee, the smell of coffee in the morning. Seeing my son smile, any puppy anywhere, the feeling of the sun on my face. And when I come across one of these moments, like getting out of the car and the sun hits my face and I feel the warmth of the sun, I'll take it in and I'll say, oh, the sun feels good on my face. I'll take a deep breath in to acknowledge and let the moment land in my body. And then on the exhale, I'll say to myself, thank you. And what you're doing each time when you do this is you're filling your bank of happiness. And eventually that spills forward into all areas of your life. So that's one of the things. The second thing is I don't strive to live a perfect life. I strive to live a happy life. The third thing I would tell myself, my younger self would be, don't waste time on things that are not important with people who are important. Too often we get lost in the trivialness of life. You know, the trivialness. What's that word, Tyler? Help me out.
Yeah, the triviality.
The triviality of life. We get lost in it. You know, we want to be right. We want to win. We want to, you know, with the people important to us, we want to have our point heard. And all that stuff doesn't really matter. You know, don't waste time, Dan, on things that are not important with people who are important. I'd also tell myself my younger self to no longer say someday. Because sure. Now. You know, losing my father early, losing one of my gladiator buddies last year, and almost losing my own life, I now know that time is not guaranteed. I also tell myself to think of less what I want to do in the world and instead focus how I want to be in the world, how I want to be, who I want to be. And I guess the last thing I would tell myself is, younger self, is trust. You're exactly where you're going to be. You're exactly where you're supposed to be. And I'd give myself a pat on the back and say, you know what? Everything's going to work out. Just let go and breathe.
Absolutely. So, I mean, it's a interesting thing when you go through these life cycles, right? Where, you know, you cheat death and you get to come back and you get to say, okay, I get a second chance. And so I love these pieces of advice that you're giving to your former self, your younger self, but also to all of us. And as a reminder, even to your current self, right? Is that we got to live in the moment, got to live in the now. But then at the same time, like, don't make excuses for the future either, right? And to make, if there's something that's truly important, to make that happen, make that the priority and not get just stuck up and stuck in doing all the things that are so easily fill our time.
What I hear you're saying and what my thing is, I think too often we get lost in the busyness of life instead of following the dreams deep in our heart. You know, we get caught up in checking things off our to-do list while we rarely spend time on things that are important. So I think if I was to say, hey, you know, what's the first thing I could, if someone was coming to me and say, Dan, what's the first thing I could change? And I would say your morning routine. Having a great morning routine in place that fuels you for the day so you can align to your purpose, to your goals, to what you want to be in life is critical. Too often in the morning, people are like, let me grab some coffee. Let me just get out here so I can start with my day. The way you start is everything, you know, and I have a morning routine I do every morning, and it's, you know, meditate, gratitude journal, plan out my day, get some exercise, protein, that really fuels my day. And instead of having a long to-do list, I narrow it down to a couple key things. And I have this other journal, it's called my Crush It Journal. And I ask myself this question. I say, if I was to do X, Y, and Z today, what would it take for me to crush the day? What are the one or two or three things that I can do today that will make a big difference in my life? So I go out, instead of trying to knock a lot of things to do off my list, I try to prioritize it. And the word crush, you know, being a gladiator, a professional athlete, that fires me up. So every day I want to crush the day. And I think that starts with having a good routine. Intruder alert, intruder alert. Yeah. Watch dogs, someone's coming into Gladiator Palace.
Yeah, I think that concept has come up a lot recently. Recently, I had Craig Ballantyne on the show, author of The Perfect Day Formula, and he talks a lot about having a routine and how the freedom comes in the routine. And this story comes up a lot with me when I'm talking with other entrepreneurs about somebody once asked Tim Ferriss, hey, we want to do a day in the life of Tim Ferriss episode. And he's like, you'd be really bored because most of my days is spent like sitting around and meditating, thinking about what's the one big domino that if I knock that over, all the little dominoes either fall down or become obsolete. And I think that concept of looking for the, you know, how do you crush the day? What's the one or two big action items that you can take is something that more and more entrepreneurs and just really anybody who is a high achieving or has the desire to achieve more needs to start thinking about is sometimes achieving more is done by doing less, but doing the right things.
Well, you know, sometimes, you know, it's an interesting thing I learned about surrender. I used to always look at surrender as losing, as a defeat. I remember when I had the heart attack and when I was in the doctor's office, I went to urgent care first because, you know, I was so bullheaded that a heart attack couldn't possibly happen to me. I did the stupid thing. I didn't go to the hospital because I couldn't. Right. I went to urgent care. And I remember the doctor telling me, you know, Mr. Clark, you're having a heart attack. And then I said, okay, you know, yeah, great. My friend, you know, I was in pain and I was hurting. And I said, my friend Ben's going to give me a ride to the hospital. And he was like, no, you got to take an ambulance. I'm like, no, my buddy's right here. You know, I don't want the $5,000 ambulance ride to go 10 minutes. You know, and I wasn't with this cool, calm and collective. I was like, I want my friend to take me, you know, Ben, he's sitting right here. I want to pay the $5,000 or whatever it's going to be to, you know, and he was like, no, you have to. And I said, why? And he says, because it's not fair to your friend if he drives you to the hospital and you die on the way that he should have to try and resuscitate you. And in that moment, I let go. I surrendered to everything around me. And it was so odd, you know, because I never realized in life how hard we fight to control everything. You know, we control what we eat, we control what we talk to, we control what we do, we control what we shouldn't do. You know, we always have control, control, control. But at that moment, when he said you could die and it shouldn't be up to your friend to resuscitate you, I let go, I surrendered. And the odd thing was I was close to death, I was having a heart attack, and because I surrendered, I was more peaceful than I'd been in a long, long time. So that's something really, really interesting about thinking, deep thought, letting go, and letting the answers come to you and evolve sometimes. So sometimes we have to surrender to win.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think it's amazing how sometimes fighting to win a battle jeopardizes the war, right? And sometimes to get the things that we really want in life, we've got to be okay, and we've got to have the humility to let go and to lose some things along the way.
Agreed. And you also brought up meditation, and you know, I've been meditating for years, and it used to be creative visualization because I was so success based, and I think it's a blend of both. you know, I talked about being this, you know, chubby little kid who was always picked last. And the one thing that I did that made the most impact and difference in my life as a young person that I use until this day was creative visualization, self-hypnosis, seeing myself successful. When I was a young guy, I'd never been successful at anything. And then I came upon this book by Maxwell Maltz called Psycho-Cybernetics. It was one of the first books on visualization. And it talked about how the mind couldn't tell the difference between a vividly imagined experience and something you actually experienced. And it showed you how to relax, you know, and get into a hypnotic state and then to start seeing yourself successful. You know, for me at that time, it was sports. You know, I wanted to be good in sports. So I started to see myself, you know, crushing the quarterback and, you know, the fans cheering and us winning and my name in the paper. And in 1 year's time, my freshman year, I quit the team because I wasn't playing about 7 games into it. Went back with this new tool of visualization and didn't really change anything else. And my sophomore year, I went from quitting the team the year before to being the MVP of the team in 1 short year using the tool and the power of visualization. So if people, if you're not out there visualizing, that's the key component that will tie in your physical productivity to your mental mind to bring things into your life. Then you get to a certain age where success, at least that version of success, acquiring more, doing more, achieving more, isn't the most important thing. Fulfillment, deep satisfaction, contentment, being at peace become more important. When that happened, I switched to a traditional meditation. You know, I studied, you know, Zen meditation. I studied Buddhism. I studied all these, you know, Hindu, all these different forms, transcendental meditation. I studied all these different forms of meditation. I found, you know, a couple practices that worked for me. And I think it's a key to having peace and relaxation and deep satisfaction in your life that acquiring things will never bring.
Yeah, no, that I think that's an important thing for everybody to take away is, I think there's so many great tools now with about meditation. I mean, there's apps that can help you do it. There's so many great resources out there. I think it's a great thing for people to try if they're, and to start implementing into part of their life and their routines. As we get towards the end of this interview, I'd like to ask everyone, and for some reason it seems even more relevant now. I ask everyone, because to me, life and business exist so that we can live the life we want, which has really been what we've been talking about this whole call. And my question for you then is like, well, what's your next big item on your bucket list? What is it that you're fighting, you know, that you're going to do next or sometime in the next 12 months, that, you know, so since you're obviously not just going to let time pass away anymore?
Well, that there's a duality in that answer. You know, sure. Each day I show up, each day I work on practicing gratitude, being kind to others, lifting people up, and each day I work on pursuing the dreams deep in my heart. My passion in life right now is this new book, F Dying,
right?
And lessons and the message it teaches. So I want to go out and spread that to the world. If you ask me one big goal,
that's a good one for
the evening category would be a TED talk.
Oh, very cool.
I think a TED talk is a great platform to get your message heard and to make an impact on people. I think my biggest fear in life is that my life didn't matter or that my life doesn't matter at the end. You know, now that I've practice the other principles that I talk about in my book. I guess that'd be the big fear. That didn't make an impact, that my life didn't matter. So the mission would be to end up on a TED talk where I can share ideas on how to master the art of living a happy, more fulfilled life.
Very cool. I hope that that comes true. And, you know, please, everyone, please go check out Dan's book, F Dying. There is a Kickstarter as well as the, you know, a website. You could check that out.
Yeah, what they want to do is they want to go to Kickstarter. They want to go just look up F Dying. And I think there's 15, 18 days in the campaign. And, you know, no matter what you can do, go support it, even if it's at the minimal $9 level, or if it's, you know, you want to work with me one-on-one, or you want to go to have dinner at Spago's with me. There's all these different things. And obviously, you know, you get the book as well.
Sure.
And by you backing it in whatever way you can, like I said, even if it's a minimal amount, it shows the world that this is a good message and it's worthwhile. And I believe it is, and I appreciate your support.
Awesome. Thank you. Now, everybody, thank you for tuning in to Biz Ninja Radio. Now it's your turn. Go out and do something.
Thank you for listening to Biz Ninja Entrepreneur Radio with Tyler Jorgensen. Please make sure to subscribe so you're first to hear new interviews and episodes. If you found this podcast to be valuable, please share it with a friend. Don't forget to visit our online dojo at bizninja.com to claim your reward for listening to the show.